Part 1. The Early Years.
October 21st. Ring any bells? Yes, on that day, in 1805, Britain beat the French and Spanish in a rather important naval encounter in the seas off southwest Europe. But 118 years later, another important event, to me anyway, happened in a two-up, two-down, terraced house in East Finchley, a middle-class suburb of North London. At 6 a.m, Gordon Westbury Simpson was born. You may ask, why Westbury? Apparently it was the fashion in those days to use grandmother's maiden names as second names. The two names in this case were Westbury and Nelson. Now, wouldn't you have thought that as I was born on Trafalgar Day, it would have been appropriate to call me after the great man? When I put this to my parents at a later date, they said it had never dawned on them, obviously no naval tradition in the family, and that as I was the first child to come along, I should receive the paternal granny's name. I will skirt over my very early life, as I can't remember a lot about it, though one of the things I can recall was being scared stiff to go into the local shops. This was because one of the first shops I was taken into was a draper, kind of ladies' DIY shop, stocking materials, wools, cottons, and all the implements required to work them. This particular shop had a system whereby a shop assistant wrote a note of your purchase, put it in a little cylindrical box with your money, and sent it on a sort of aerial wire railway, which shot it over to the cashier, who sat in an elevated position at the end of the shop. In doing so, it made a loud clanging noise, and it was this that scared the wits out of me. And I suppose I must have thought that all shops had them, because I remember being allowed to stay outside, or I would have held the place down.
My dad, Sidney Benjamin, was a printer. He worked for his father, who owned the Finchley Press, which published the local paper, and did general printing as well. My mother, Rose Emily, was a clerk until she married. Married women weren't expected to work in those days. Her father was an accountant. When I was around 4, we moved to Bournemouth. I was told that it was because Grandfather Simpson had bought a printing business in Bournemouth, the Waverley Press, for my dad to run. Initially, we lived in a pleasant, detached, 3-bedroom house in Gresham Road. We didn't have any electricity, so everything was gas. All the gas lights had mantles, about the size of a large thimble, and made of a sort of ceramic gilt gauze. The gas burnt over it, but it was a very delicate object and would disintegrate if handled wrongly. They gave quite reasonable illumination, if you had enough of them, but they made an incessant hissing noise. Of course, there was no central heating. The only way to keep warm in the winter was to huddle around the coal fire. We had no radio, TV, or even a gramophone, and the grown-ups would spend most of their spare time reading, playing cards or board games, when they were not able to undertake outdoor activities. There were few cars around. They were only for the rich. Horse and cart was the main form of delivery. The milkman came every day with great big containers, and he would dispense the milk into our jugs using half-pint and pint metal measures. We had no fridges, so dairy, meat, etc. were kept in a safe, which was just a box with a piece of very close netting on the front to keep the flies out, which was kept in the coolest part of the pantry. The baker delivered daily, and the coal man came weekly in winter, measuring out the amount you wanted on his scales. There were no traffic problems, only horse-drawn carts and bicycles.
Long-distance public transport was all steam trains, and their timings compared favourably with those of today. For instance, there was a daily fast train that went non-stop from Bournemouth to London in a shade under 2 hours. In the town, which was only about a third of its present size, it was almost all trams. We had no telephone at that time, but Royal Mail was excellent. We had several collections and deliveries every day, and all for 3 halfpenny stamps, 3/4 of a present penny. Anything urgent, you sent in a telegram from the nearest post office, from where it would be telegraphed through to the recipient's post office and then delivered by a telegraph boy. In some cases, that could be in a matter of few hours, and all for a penny a word. When I was about 7, we moved to Chigwell Road and experienced electricity for the first time. Imagine the joy of being able to switch on lights and have electric fires to augment the inevitable coal fire. I was due to go to school, and a new one was being built just around the corner, and it opened the very day that I started. This was Charminster Primary School, and very innovative it was. All the classrooms had underfloor heating, which was pretty advanced at that time, and all the outside classroom doors could be opened out so that on hot summer days we could be almost sitting in the open air. We had moved to a bigger house. I imagine this was because I now had a younger brother, Brian, already growing out of the baby stage. We were now terribly up to date with mains electricity and, before long, wireless. This consisted of a box about 9 inches square, which had on top a small piece of crystal, hence the name Crystal Set, and it was placed under a small strip of sprung metal, which one had to jiggle with until you got a signal. Normally, one would require a long wire aerial strung across the garden in order to pick up anything, and then probably only through headphones. However, we were lucky, as the local BBC transmitter was only a few hundred yards away, so we could actually use the loudspeaker, which consisted of a large horn attached by wire to the crystal set. The only snag with this was that, short of connecting the wires every time, you couldn't turn it off. Transmissions at that time were only a few hours in the evening, but occasionally one would be woken up during the night by "Hello, 1, 2, 3, testing," and a record being played. There was only one station which broadcast from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. As kids, we always used to listen to Children's Hour at 5 p.m. We were thrilled to listen to Uncle Mac and Co, and particularly Toy Town. The sound quality was pretty poor by modern standards, but to us it was absolute magic.
By the time I was about 10, relations between Mum and Dad had deteriorated. They often separated for a while, but often got back together again. Dad was a very good father to us boys. During one of their separations, when he was staying with his father and mother in Eltham, South East London, I joined them for a couple of weeks, and Dad gave me a small boy's holiday of a lifetime. We went everywhere, in and around London. The most memorable to me were the Science Museum, Tower Bridge, and, would you believe it, the Woolwich Free Ferry, which operated frequently across the Thames before the tunnel was built, and led to Dockland, another fascinating place, as in those days, London was the biggest dock area in the country, with lots of lovely big ships from all over the world. What a thrill for this young lad. What a holiday that was. I will never forget it. It was decided to send me to boarding school, Launceston College on the border of Devon and Cornwall. At only 10 years old, I was naturally apprehensive about leaving home for 3 months at a time, but off I had to go. We hadn't a car, so we went by train, from Bournemouth West to Salisbury, where I caught the Atlantic Coast Express. Sounds impressive, doesn't it? This had individual coaches, each being dropped off at various points down the line. There were coaches for Seaton, Sidmouth, Exmouth, Plymouth, Barnstable, Bude and Padstow, but I got the Bodmin coach, which went through Launceston. The first time, Mum and Dad came with me to see me settled in, but I was scared stiff when they left. I was taken on a tour by some of the boys, who thought a new boy was good for a few pranks. I was told I had to pull a rope to tell the duty master I was ready for the next part of my induction. What I wasn't told was that this was the school bell, which could be heard over half the town.
The school was made up of about 150 day boys and 30 borderers. Of the latter, about 12 came from Cornwall, the same number from Devon, leaving about 5 or 6 of us outsiders. The Cornish lads were always arguing with the Devonians, but they all ganged up against us. I didn't enjoy it very much, and I certainly didn't advance my academic side very well. There were some happier times, though. I made a particular friend of Arthur, who lived in St Ives. And because it was a long way for me to come home for half-term holidays, only a long weekend, I used to go home with him. These holidays were great fun, as not only is St Ives such a lovely place, but Arthur's family were interesting people. Arthur's dad ran the local ironmonger's shop and was also superintendent of the local St John's ambulance. On one occasion, when the lifeboat was called out, he had to go out with it to deal with any injuries. So he took us along to the hut on the harbour side to chat with some of the local fishermen while he was gone. Some of the stories they told us were quite hair-raising for a couple of inquisitive young lads. Back at school, some of the extracurricular activities were more fun. I didn't like rugby, the winter game, but did enjoy cricket. I didn't make the school first 11, but I was 12th man and scorer, so used to go to all the away matches. Then there was the Scouts, which I quite enjoyed. A special occasion which I remember was when we all marched about half a mile down to the local cinema to see the first all-colour film, Becky Sharp, the Vanity Fair story. On Sundays, we were all marched to the Methodist Church for morning service. For this, we wore dark monkey jackets and trousers and bow ties and mortarboards, a complete contrast to what we wore during the week, khaki shirts, open neck and shorts throughout the year, whatever the temperature. My time there was not happy, and after 2 or 3 years, this became obvious to Mum and Dad. And as they were finding it difficult to afford to keep me there, I left.
And so I went to Bournemouth Grammar School. I was one of those whose birthday was around the beginning of the school year, and I was started off in the higher of the two age groups. We quickly discovered that I was way behind, so I had to be transferred to the lower group. From then onwards, I made reasonable progress academically. In those days, Bournemouth School for Boys occupied two separate buildings. The main school was in Porchester Road, and the lower 2 years in Lowther Road. These locations were about a quarter of a mile apart, so we had about a 10-minute walk when we had to attend the physics or chemistry labs, etc. However, the big event as far as we were concerned, apart from the worsening international situation, was the fact that they were building us a brand new school on Eastway, quite close to Chigwell Road, where we lived. It was due to open at the beginning of the autumn term in 1939. However, as you no doubt will have gathered, another event happened at that time too.